subdued almost all Asia and a large portion of Europe.
At this point, Gibbon returns to the fortunes of Constantinople, which by the middle of the 14th century began to be subjected to the attentions of the descendants of Genghis Khan. The emperor of the day, John Cantazuzini, entered into a treaty with the Turkish Ottoman powers, opening the way for the much-reduced empire, which, says Gibbon, by the end of this century, was contracted to a corner of Thrace between the Propontis and the Black Sea, about 50 miles in length and 30 in breadth, finally to be subsumed within the Ottoman Empire. But not before Timur marched across the stage, delaying the ultimate fall of Constantinople by some 50 years.
The conquest and monarchy of the world was the first object of the ambition of Timur. To live in the memory and esteem of future ages was the second wish of his magnanimous spirit. All the civil and military transactions of his reign were diligently recorded in the journals of his secretaries. The authentic narrative was revised by the persons best informed of each particular transaction. And it is believed in the empire and family of Timur that the monarch himself composed the commentaries of his life and the institutions of his government. But these cares were ineffectual for the preservation of his fame, and these precious memorials in the Mongol or Persian language were concealed from the world, or at least from the knowledge of Europe. The nations which he vanquished exercised a base and impotent revenge, and ignorance has long repeated the tale of calumny which had disfigured the birth and character, the person and even the name of Tamerlane. Yet his real merit would be enhanced rather than debased by the elevation of a peasant to the throne of Asia. Nor can his lameness be a theme of reproach, unless he had the weakness to blush at a natural or perhaps an honourable infirmity. In the eyes of the Mongols, who held the indefeasible succession of the House of Genghis, he was doubtless a rebel subject. Yet he sprang from the noble tribe of Berlas. His fifth ancestor, Karashar Nevian, had been the vizier of Zagatai in his new realm of Transoxiana. And in the ascent of some generations, the branch of Timur is confounded, at least by the females, with the imperial stem. He was born 40 miles to the south of Samarkand, in the village of Sebzar, in the fruitful territory of Kash, of which his fathers were the hereditary chiefs, as well as of a Toman of 10,000 horse. His birth was cast on one of those periods of anarchy which announced the fall of the Asiatic dynasties, and opened a new field to adventurous ambition. The Khans of Zagatai were extinct. The emirs aspired to independence, and their domestic feuds could only be suspended by the conquest and tyranny of the Khans of Kashgar, who, with an army of Getes or Kalmucks, invaded the Transoxian kingdom. From the 12th year of his age, Timur had entered the field of action. In the 25th, he stood forth as the deliverer of his country, and the eyes and wishes of the people were turned towards a hero who suffered in their cause. The chiefs of the law and of the army had pledged their salvation to support him with their lives and fortunes, but in the hour of danger they were silent and afraid. And after waiting 7 days on the hills of Samarkand, he retreated to the desert with only 60 horsemen. The fugitives were overtaken by 1,000 Getes, whom he repulsed with incredible slaughter, and his enemies were forced to exclaim, "Timur is a wonderful man. Fortune and the divine favour are with him." But in this bloody action, his own followers were reduced to 10, a number which was soon diminished by the desertion of 3 Carizmians. He wandered in the desert with his wife, 7 companions and 4 horses, and 62 days was he plunged in a loathsome dungeon, from whence he escaped by his own courage and the remorse of the oppressor. After swimming the broad and rapid stream of the Jehun or Oxus, he led, during some months, the life of a vagrant and outlaw on the borders of the adjacent states. But his fame shone brighter in adversity. He learned to distinguish the friends of his person, the associates of his fortune, and to apply the various characters of men for their advantage and, above all, for his own. On his return to his native country, Timur was successful.